Okay, thank you very much, Sam. It's a privilege to be here this morning to address the Kol Yom Rishon in Chicago. Thank you for providing me with such superlative weather over the weekend. That's what they tell me. So the subject for today is the importance of character in Torah leadership positions, and it is not at all meant to be presumptuous in any way. I have had the privilege over the last number of years to serve in a variety of capacities in Torah leadership, serving the Jewish community, first as the director of the Beit Din of America, the last number of years as the dean of Yeshivat Rabbeinu Yitzchak Elchanan at Yeshiva University. And it is important sometimes when one is serving in these capacities to just take a step back and to reflect a little bit about what are the ideal conditions in which we should approach our leadership positions, what is the right posture, what is the right attitude, and what are the expectations we should have of those who occupy leadership positions. So when I go through these sources, I'm going through these sources in part in order to just reinforce myself in terms of what my own personal perspective should be when it comes to serving in a position of leadership. Now, lately, in the Jewish community as a whole, there really has been more of a focus, I think, on this particular issue, because we have seen in recent times a certain amount of unfortunate scandal where there are accusations made of those who have served in positions, whether as youth leaders, as teachers, as those who are responsible caretakers of the community, who have sometimes strayed in their own personal behavior. We know of scandals that have been reported in terms of child molestation, for example. And we have to be honest with ourselves about whether we're really doing a sufficiently good job in making sure that we are focusing on the right set of standards when we are appointing leaders in the first place and when we are examining the actions and the behavior of leaders once they have been appointed. One of the problems, perhaps, has been that there has been a focus on charismatic personality in undue measure, and as a result, perhaps, we sometimes look for people who we think are going to be effective because they're very good communicators, because they're very inspirational speakers, but maybe we're not focusing enough upon the character. And as we shall see, particularly when it comes to the realm of Torah leadership, character is the most essential and most paramount quality, even more than other attributes or assets that a person might have. So the first piece that I want to focus upon is the attitude towards assuming a position of leadership. The first source is a famous Gemara in Maseches Horios, and it really sets the stage. The Gemara tells us that Rabbi Gamliel was very impressed with the scientific knowledge of Rabbi Yoshua. They took a trip on a boat, and Rabbi Yeshua had taken with him some extra provisions of food. And Rabbi Gamliel said, "How did you know that we might end up being delayed and that the ride or the trip would take longer than anticipated?" And Rabbi Yeshua said, "Because there's some sort of a comet that comes out once every 7 years, and I had a hunch that it might come around now, and it would confuse the captain of the ship." So Rabbi Gamliel said, "Wow, you're smart." Rabbi Yeshua said, "Ah, you think I'm smart? I have two Talmidim who are even smarter than I am in terms of their worldly knowledge." I guess worldly knowledge is also a prerequisite for leadership. And their names are Rabbi Elazar Chasma and Rabbi Yochanan ben Gugada. And you really should offer them some significant position of leadership because they could really use the extra money. I guess there's another criteria, appoint somebody who needs the money. So the Gemara says that these Talmidim, Yodin Shara Kamatipos Yesh Bayam, they're so smart they can figure out how many drops of water there are in the sea. Veilan Paslech of Lobeg Lilbosh. So Nosan Daito Rabbi Gamliel then had in mind those Shivan Barosh to appoint them to position of Torah leadership. Kisha'ala Shachlam Lobo. So when he came up from when he disembarked from the from the boat and came back to shore, he sent for them in order to appoint them to a Torah leadership position, but they refused to show up. So then only afterwards he sent for them again, Ubo, and they came the second time. So why is it that they didn't show up at the first time? After all, they were summoned by Rabban Gamliel. Rabban Gamliel was a significant figure of authority in the Torah community. Presumably it was disrespectful. So this presumably was based on the Gemara in Brachos that says that if you're asked to serve as a shliach tzibor, you're asked to lead the community, even if it's only in prayer, then you're supposed to hesitate. You're supposed to be mesarev. You're supposed to not be so quick to accept the invitation, because the general attitude that one is supposed to have is one of hesitation from accepting a position of authority. That we believe in our tradition that the best sign of a good shliach tzibor, the best sign of a good Torah leader, is somebody who is reluctant to assume the post, much in the same way that Moshe Rabbeinu expressed tremendous reluctance when HaKadosh Baruch Hu chose him to be the leader of Bnei Yisrael, to take them out of Mitzrayim. We know that Moshe Rabbeinu resisted for a full 7 days. So you would think that's a terrible chutzpah to resist HaKadosh Baruch Hu for 7 days, but the answer is that this is the first reflection of somebody who has the credentials to be a leader, somebody who goes in kicking and screaming and really does not want, ideally, to assume the mantle of leadership. So Rabban Gamliel simply set them straight in terms of not being overly, perhaps consumed by the fear of authority. So he said, Amar lahem, kimidumin atem, shesarar ani nosein lachem. Do you really think that I am presenting you with a position of great honor? Ha! This is Jewish leadership. Avdus ani nosein lachem. I am giving you servitude. This is going to be really, really miserable. So once he reassured them that it was going to be really miserable and nobody would demonstrate any respect to them whatsoever, then they were mollified. And they, of course, accepted the position. But the lesson of this story, which is an extremely important one, is that Jewish leadership is not something that we view as aspirational, that a person should go through life saying, I want to be a leader, I want to be a leader, I want to be in charge, I want to be the boss, I want to be the head honcho. But the attitude should be that, of course, I am reluctant to serve in a position of authority, but if I am summoned and it is necessary for me to serve the community, then, of course, I will be available. The same way that Yeshayahu said in this past week's Haftarah, Hineni Shlacheni, that if you really need me, when he heard the call of HaKadosh Baruch Hu coming to him, he said, I am available if you need me. And we know that his tour of service as a Navi certainly was not a particularly pleasant one, ended according to tradition in his being murdered, which is sort of the expected end result of Jewish leadership positions. So in the first important criterion for a Torah leader is somebody who doesn't really want to be. When you see somebody whose sole goal in life is to be an authoritative figure, that already is the first point of suspicion according to our tradition. Now, the next question to examine is, what is the type of character when we do select somebody kicking and screaming? So who is the type of person that we want to assume this type of position? So Gemara Moed Katan talks about the uncomfortable situation that we sometimes are presented with, namely a person who is in a leadership position, and there are rumors, shmuels, that the individual is not comporting himself appropriately. Now, when the Gemara indicates a person who's not comporting himself appropriately, generally speaking, the implication is in their personal relationships, that the person was engaged in inappropriate behavior with respect to perhaps their own personal sexual activity. So the Gemara says, Ha'utzorba mirabban and dahavu sanu shimane. Now, this could be analogous to a rabbinic figure who has wandering eyes, who's accused of being a philanderer, or somebody who could be accused of not treating the children, or not treating the charges that are his responsibility in the appropriate fashion, bringing to mind, of course, our the child molestation accusations that arise against somebody from time to time. So I'm Rabbi Yehuda Hekeli Yavid. So Rabbi Yehuda said, how should we deal with this individual? Lishamte Tzrikalei Rabbanon. Should we put him in Cheirim? Should we banish him from his position? The reality is he's presumably effective. That's why we appointed him. He's good at transmitting knowledge. He's good at being a pedagogue, whatever the specific job descriptions have been. And we have a need for a teacher, an instructor, a community leader. This fellow presumably had the charisma and all of those attributes. Lo l'shamte, but if we leave it alone, what kind of a message are we sending? Kamiskul shema d'shemaya. This person is causing a desecration of God's name. So he was confused. He was faced with this community dilemma. We're putting it in simplistic terms. It's essentially the community dilemma that we sometimes have to deal with from time to time. How much do you sweep things under the rug because the person is otherwise charismatic and effective and so forth? And how much do you say, hey, we care about character. Character counts. There's the Gemara in Kiddushin that talks about, if you saw Tzitzia Tamachachim, who's over Avera Bayom, who's over Avera Balayla, you see that he commits an indiscretion. Assume that people aren't 100% perfect, but maybe it looked like an indiscretion. This is not a case where we're talking about somebody who is straying because that's part of his character, just somebody, maybe he went to an R-rated movie, I don't know. It wasn't something for which he needs to be fired, but he didn't use his best judgment, shall we say. So the Gemara says, Al teharir achara b'yom, that generally we try to give people the benefit of the doubt if it's just kind of a one-time thing and there's a way in which it could be interpreted favorably. We're not looking to destroy our leaders based on innuendo when there is a favorable interpretation. So it says, Al teharir achara b'yom, Shema Satchuva, because maybe he did tshuva. Maybe he repented, even if his judgment wasn't 100% perfect. So the Gemara then says, Shema Satchuva Salkadaitek. We mean maybe he did tshuva. Badaya Satchuva. Definitely he did tshuva. So one of my Rebbeim, Rabbi Moshe Tendler, at Yeshiva, has interpretation of this Gemara. Badaya Satchuva. Badaya, he sat down and he wrote a tshuva justifying what he did. You know, so. But again, even that, Gemara is talking about, you know, something where there's the possibility of perhaps finding a justifiable explanation, but clearly, at a certain point, the course is over the line where you know that there is a smoking gun. So, Amalei, the Rabbah Baba Chana. So, the Rabbi Yehuda asked the Shaila, Rabbah Baba Chana, Midi Shmiya Lach Baha. Do you have some guidance for me? Which way do I go? Do I look the other way, or do we have to crack down? So Amalei, so he said, Hakiyam Rabbi Yochanan, and this is a very, very important principle, he said, when it comes to Torah leadership positions, the most paramount consideration is impeccable character. We need somebody who serves as an excellent role model for the community. Ma'idiksev, we have a pasuk in Malachi that says, Ki sifse kohen yishmu das, v'torah yivakshim mipiyu, ki malach Hashem tzivakotu. That when it comes to being mevakesh Torah, to learning Torah, to be inspired in terms of somebody's Torah leadership, then you need to be able to turn to somebody and say, this individual who is exemplifying a Torah leadership and Torah instruction is Malach Hashem Tzivakotu, is an angel of God. In Domer Rav L'Malach Hashem, if the Rav, the Rebbe, the Torah leader, resembles, a Malach Hashem resembles an angel of God, Yivakshu Torah Mipiv. Then it's appropriate to seek Torah from this individual. Bimlav, but if not, Al Yivakshu Torah Mipiv. Then it is inappropriate. Then it is unacceptable for this person to be in that position of leadership, and you should not seek Torah guidance from this individual. So unlike, for example, a doctor who, even if the doctor in his own private life happens to smoke cigarettes, but the doctor gives excellent medical advice and medical treatment to his patients, it still makes sense to go to that doctor. Or a lawyer, who if the lawyer is very effective in the courtroom, even if the lawyer may not necessarily pay nanny tax, so maybe we won't appoint him to be attorney general, but nonetheless, you might still go to him to represent you in a court case. When it comes to a rabbinic figure, when it comes to a rabbinic leader, there is a different standard. The rabbinic leader has to practice what he preaches. He has to exemplify the Torah that he transmits. He has to have the best and most exemplary character of anybody in the community. If it is a choice between his skill sets, between his charismatic leadership on the one hand, and examining his faulty, flawed character on the other hand, then you have to dismiss him, because character counts more than the raw rabbinic ability that is involved in the position. So that is basically the guide that the Gemara gives us. The Gemara asks Akasha elsewhere, Maseches Chagiga, that's source number three, that we know that Rabbi Meir had as his teacher, as his primary Rebbe, one of his primary Rebbeim, he had Elisha ben Avuya. Elisha ben Avuya was a tremendous Talmid Chacham who went bad. He went rancid. So the Gemara says, he's a Talmid Chacham shesarach. He somehow gave up his religion, and even though he was still a very effective teacher and a very knowledgeable Talmid Chacham, nonetheless, he was somebody who did not observe a Torah lifestyle. He was somebody who sinned with a harlot on Yom Kippur. According to what the Gemara tells us, he committed the most atrocious sins from a character perspective. And the Gemara goes even further that he committed all kinds of atrocities, both in the realm of Bein Adam L'Makom and in the realm of Bein Adam L'Chaveiro. So the Gemara asks, how is it that Rabbi Meir continued to utilize the services of Acher, of Elisha ben Avuya, who is known as Acher? He was called Acher because the harlot in question in the story turned to him at one point and said, you're not Elisha ben Avuya, you're Acher, you're somebody else, you turned into something else. So in fact, that's how we refer to him. We refer to him as Acher. So the Gemara says, but don't we have a principle, that the Rebbe has to be similar to a Malach Hashem? So Reish Lakish kind of justified Rabbi Meir's behavior and said, well, what Rabbi Meir basically did was, there are different metaphors that are utilized, but he took the pomegranate and he threw out the pit. That was one way of phrasing it, that he took what was good from Elisha ben Avuya and he knew how to distill the good from the bad. So the Gemara says, well, now we're all very confused, because we have one pasuk that says that if we're deciding who we're going to appoint as a mentor, who we're going to appoint as a leader, it's somebody who has to have such impeccable character that they are domel malach Hashem, that they resemble an actual angel of God. So how could Rabbi Meir have made this justification? So the Gemara gives some sort of a teretz. The Gemara says, well, for a katan, for somebody who is not able to really differentiate between the good and the bad, sort of your average Joe or Joseph in the community, so then such an individual should not utilize the leadership of an Acher type personality. But for somebody who was of the grand stature of Rabbi Meir, who was able to make these fine differentiations, so then it was appropriate for Rabbi Meir to still learn from the character of, or to learn from the instruction of Acher, and figure out how he would basically separate the Torah from the character. But when this is codified as a matter of Jewish law, both in the codification of Maimonides of the Rambam and in the codification in the Shulchan Aruch, you look in source number four, the codification of the law does not draw any such distinction. The halacha says, harav she'en olek b'derech tova, you have a rab, you have a Torah leader who is not walking in the straight path, who is acting improperly in terms of his personal conduct, certainly if he's acting improperly in terms of the way that he interacts with his charges. Even though he's a great Talmid Chacham, tremendous, and everybody feels, how are we going to manage without this guy? There's nobody else who's ever been in the history of our community such an effective youth leader, or whatever the case may be. Doesn't matter. We cannot learn from such a person. We cannot employ such an individual, achi aksa l'mutav, until he is restored, until he goes back to straighten out his ways. And the Rambam elsewhere says that if you have somebody in a significant position of leadership, and they bring embarrassment upon themselves and bring embarrassment upon the entire community through their unethical or inappropriate behavior, you actually do not ever restore them to their prior post. There's certainly some of the types of cases that we have dealt with in recent times in our community fall into the latter category, where there's no such thing as achi aksa l'mutav, in terms of restoring them to an actual position of authority, that we would never do. Maybe we might allow the person to share a Dvar Torah with us, but we would never allow the person to be restored to a position of authority, because it sends the wrong message. The Rambam writes this in Hilchos Sanhedrin. It sends the wrong message, because then the implication might be that even if a person acts improperly, and even if a person does act inappropriately, it's not such a severe offense that we're going to shut out the person forever, and therefore it might not be taken as seriously in the future. We have to send a strong and unambiguous message that such individuals cannot serve as the leaders of the community. So what happened to the distinction that was articulated in the Gemara between a gadol and a katan? Why don't we say that at least if we are dealing with individuals who are sophisticated enough, maybe an entire community that is sophisticated enough to say, well, we know about the bad, but we'll just take the good. So why don't we allow that, at least for those who are in the category of gedolim, who are sophisticated and know how to differentiate? So the Shach, in his commentary in the Shulchan Aruch, at source number 5, says that the reality is that if you look at the Gemara seems to say that outside of Rabbi Meir, nobody else was prepared to rely upon this distinction. And why is that? Because even in the time of the Gemara, they viewed themselves as ketanim. They viewed themselves as basically not sufficiently sophisticated, as not being on such a high level. The kol shekem b'zman hazeh shekulam nechshavim ketanim. And certainly, we should not be so presumptuous to think that we're going to be able to subject ourselves to the influence of somebody who does not have appropriate character, and somehow avoid being influenced by such a person, somehow avoid having our children influenced by such a person. So says the Shach, we don't draw any such distinctions. We simply draw a bright line, namely that if a Torah leader has demonstrated significant flaws of character, we do not allow the person to serve in that capacity, regardless of whatever other attributes and whatever other assets that person may possess. This is very important, not only in terms of evaluating those who are in the Torah leadership positions, who have sinned or strayed, committed indiscretions, but in terms of how we go about the process of appointing people in the first place. We appoint people in the first place, we have to make sure that our focus is primarily upon the midos, primarily upon the ethical conduct and character of the person. How does the person comport himself? How does the person interact with others? How does the Rav treat other people? Does he have a fine and good disposition? How is what is the reputation of the Rav in terms of his personal life? I mean, even just looking at some recent examples in our communal history, when I think of individuals who somehow were exposed as being abusive personalities in terms of the way that they dealt with children, in certain cases, I think that the community, although it's a terrible thing to say, but I think that the community as a whole was sometimes at fault. In terms of appointing the people in the first place, allowing the individuals to remain in their posts, even if they may not have known of outright molestation that took place, in certain cases, the people knew that they were dealing with a strange, peculiar personality who didn't always speak nicely, didn't always interact nicely with other people. That was something that was goluim or foursome. In certain cases, that was obvious and crystal clear and publicly manifested. But nonetheless, sometimes we've made the mistake, I believe, in our community, of placing more of a value upon charisma, more of a value upon a person's raw speaking abilities and inspirational abilities, and we've placed less of a value upon looking for impeccable character that we view as the type of character that we would like to emulate ourselves. And I think what these sources tell us very clearly, and what is a good warning sign and guide for the future, is that in fact we have to change that priority scale and make sure that the top priority has to be that we want that every single person in Torah leadership positions, whether it's a youth leader, whether it's a principal, whether it's a rav of a city or a rav of a community, that every single such person be a person that we feel has the type of impeccable character that is doma lemalach Hashem tzevakot and is worthy of emulation. And then the other features are secondary. But the other features are not primary. And this feature has to be our primary emphasis with respect to any such selections. So if you look at source number six tells us something very, very interesting. Source number six tells us, Tanu Rabbanan Shlosha Kadosh Baruch Hu Bochei Alein B'chol Yom. There are three types of individuals that a Kadosh Baruch Hu cries about every single day. Very interesting formulation. Cries about every single day. Al She'er Shel Asuk B'Torah Ve'Eino Osik. A person who is capable of learning Torah, but does not actually occupy himself with learning Torah. Bal She'er Shel Asuk B'Torah Ve'Osik. Person who is not so good at learning Torah, but insists on getting funded to sit and learn in kol all day. And then the third category, very interestingly, is a parnas, a community leader, a Torah leader, who basically lords his authority over the congregation. What the Gemara is telling us is that this type of position of being a Torah leader requires somebody whose general comportment and general interaction with the community is one of gentleness and kindness. And when you have somebody who lords the authority and for whom the authority of the position becomes more important, basically, than the function of the position, of the avdus aninosein lachem, of serving the community, then this is such a terrible travesty that it causes a Kodesh Baruch Hu to shed tears. And not only to shed tears once in a while, but to shed tears every single day. So this, I think, is the explanation. If you look at the source number 8 of the rather striking and puzzling statement in the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, where Shmaya and Rav Talion say, basically Shmaya says that Sanei et harabanut, that you should hate any position of rabbanut, which is understood by some as meaning very literally the rabbinate, that you should hate any position of a Torah leadership. So the Tiferes Yisrael commentator on Pirkei Avos says, what does that mean? He says, what does it mean that you should hate the position of the rabbinate? After all, we need rabbis. We need people to serve in this type of capacity. So he explains, it means you should hate serving, or you should refrain very strongly from serving in a position of rabbanut, of the rabbinate, in a fashion in which you are misgaya ala tzibur, in which you make it into a rabbanut capacity where the stature of the rabbanut is more important than the function of serving the community. He says, interestingly, if you're forced to earn a panasa from your chokmah, right? Like the case in Horios of Rabbi Elazar Chasma, Rabbi Yochanan ben Gugada, right? Who had to be appointed to leadership because they didn't have money. Uminu oskarab. So you have to accept a position, again, against your will, kicking and screaming, to serve as a community leader. Alko parim tisna milistave valtson marisecha. Nonetheless, you should find it hateful to assert your authority unduly upon your flock that you are supposed to be serving. Rather, you should lead them with tremendous mercy and compassion like a father to his children, and not like a master who whacks his servants. That is not why you were appointed to such a position. Ukimo, and he quotes our Gemara, Sha'amar Rabban Gamliel, Kulum Sararu Saninosein Lachem, Abdu Saninosein Lachem. You think that I'm giving you Sarah, I'm giving you Abdus. The Cholam is Gaia, Havika Oved about Izorah. Anybody who becomes arrogant in the position, it is as if they are worshipping idols, and he goes along in this vein, and he says at the end, Mizel Sha'amu Chazal, this is what our rabbis taught us, Rabbanut Mikaveret et Bealeah, that the rabbinate buries its occupiers. This is something anybody who has served in a rabbinic capacity can certainly well understand. But he explains, Rasona Lomar, his Ravavut Shel Harav, that this is when the Arab, when the rabbinic leader acts with arrogance. So then that will destroy him. It will destroy him because all he cares about is his kavod and making sure that he has requisite authority. That's going to eat him up alive. If his focus is properly on serving his charges and doing acts of chesed and goodness to the tzibor, so that's not going to eat him up alive because he won't care about his kavod. Otherwise, if all he cares about is kavod, that's going to destroy him. It'll ruin his health. He won't have kavod in the end. Vesikla will go out of his mind. Vesikasa, he's certainly not going to remain righteous under those circumstances. Kulon yimasu kimasus no sesimo. They're all going to continuously decline if his attitude is one of arrogance and one of trying to feed his ego. So this, again, underscores the point that it is essential when we're talking about the character of those in Torah leadership positions to look for somebody who is essentially reluctant to assume the post, and to look for somebody who exemplifies the ideal attributes that we would all want to emulate as a role model in terms of being domen lemalach Hashem tzivakos. And the way in which this is appropriately maintained is for a person who goes into that position to be the most humble type of a personality that is out there, in order not to be consumed by his own arrogance. And there's a fascinating comment that I came across just in a perush on Pirkei Avos by the editor of a Torah journal going back maybe 80 years ago or so. There was a Torah journal called Apiryon, and the editor was Shmuel Miller, and he wrote a commentary on Pirkei Avos in which he was lamenting the fact that there were Torah personalities who did not always comport themselves with the most pristine ethical character in terms of their personal lives or in terms of the way they interacted with others. And he related that to their qualification in terms of being a Bala Masorah, of being somebody who was a qualified transmitter of Torah tradition. And just listen to these words. It's really absolutely very very striking. Moshe kibel Torah Masor to Yoshua. It says, Moshe received the Torah and transmitted it to Yoshua. It says, Hamasiva mochakas ala Kabbalah, Kabbalah misinai omeris. He says that the Masira has to be a Masira that shows that you had a proper Kabbalah. Let me skip a line. He says, Misha zachal beged ruchani, somebody who has the spiritual tools, kibel misinai, somebody who you look at them and you can see that this is somebody who has a character that is reflective of a spiritual essence, so then such a person has a Kabbalah from Har Sinai. Misha biyado Zer Mishamayim, says, and somebody who has that type of a crown, that type of an ethical crown of character, Zochet, the Mesira Hashba'asa, Gedola, has tremendous influence, many other Mishman Lama Osim Mitzonim, people listen to him, and they follow what he says. However, Tamachacham Shinimtza Rebbe Balbigdo, there's a statement in the Gemara in Shabbos that if a Tamachacham has a stain on his garment, then he's Chayav Misa, then he is liable to receive capital punishment for having a stain on his garment. It's a little bit severe. You have a stain on your garment, you're liable for capital punishment. So he explains it homiletically, which is good for all of us who have difficulty preventing stains on our garments. So he says that basically what this means is Tamachacham Shinimtza Rebbe Balbigdo, Bigdo Aruchani. It means he has a spiritual stain on his soul. Pagam Betoris Midosa. He has a flaw in terms of his character traits. Dofi Bataris Ma'alosav. He has a shortcoming with respect to his ethical conduct. Chayav Misa. So then he is liable to receive the death penalty. What does that mean? Death penalty doesn't mean a literal death penalty. It means lo zocha lekabel umemela eno zocha limsor. He cannot become a receptacle for Torah. Since he cannot become a proper receptacle for Torah, therefore he does not merit to properly transmit Torah. Meis mus misa ruchanis. He dies a spiritual death. When we talk about who are we going to learn from, who do we look towards in order to transmit our Torah values, our Torah traditions, if it is a person who does not have ethical character, who does not comport himself in the proper fashion, who has a spiritual stain on his garment, so the Torah that he teaches does not deserve to be part of the chain of transmission of our Torah tradition. That's a very powerful statement on the part of this commentator. But I believe that there's a tremendous amount of truth to it. Because when we're talking about maintaining a Torah society and having proper teachers who are going to transmit the ethics and the values and the teachings of that society, but the cornerstone of our Torah community is, in fact, ethical conduct and is, in fact, a type of persona that we can look at and say, Kazera Eva Kadesh, this is the type of person that Judaism was meant to produce. And if a Torah leader is not reflecting those values, then he has no right to be a chain in the transmission of our heritage. And this is yet another reason why we have to be so meticulous in terms of making sure that those who we look at upon as our leaders, as our role models, whom our children are going to look upon as our leaders, as our role models, who are in these positions of Torah leadership and authority, have to primarily distinguish themselves through their character, even more so, if I dare say, than their learning. And if you think that this is sort of just a it's one person's unique chiddush, the fact is that if you look in the Rambam himself, in his Hakdama to the Perush HaMishnayos, that's source number 11, in his introduction to the Perush HaMishnayos, where he records all of the Balei Mesorah, all of the proper transmitters of Torah tradition through the years, and he records in each generation, that in this generation it was these rabbis, the following generation it was the following rabbis. So the Rambam says, you will note that when I recorded all of the Torah leaders of the early generations who were the transmitters of the tradition, who were the Balei Mesorah, I left out somebody. He says, you know who I left out? He says, Nimtza Kla Minyan HaChacham Shenisku Mishnah Me'er Ve'esu Mishmona. I counted 128. I was very meticulous to count everybody. And then he mentions that there was, however, there's one person, he left out one person because he didn't really say anything, but then he said there was one person that even though he said a lot of things, I left him out. He's mentioned in the Gemara, but I left him out. Elisha, Acher. I left out Acher. I left out Elisha ben Avuya. I could not count him among the Balei HaMesorah because of his character lapses. As a result of that, he no longer merits in my listing to be one of the Balei HaMesorah, even though we know that he taught Torah, even though we know that he taught Torah to Rabbi Meir. Nonetheless, he does not count anymore. He's not there. He's out of the list. So this, I believe, is an extremely, extremely powerful mussar for us to bear in mind when we think about who we want to appoint to be in the position of serving as one of the Balei HaMesorah, one of the transmitters of the continued tradition of our people, Bizman HaZeh. So this is in terms of making sure that a person has pristine ethical conduct and character in order to occupy a position of a Torah leadership. But we're focusing so far on the aspect of character, that the person should be somebody who refrains from inappropriate behavior, that it should be somebody who refrains from character lapses, somebody who speaks nicely and interacts nicely with the community and guides them with nachas, with a gentle spirit. And even somebody who is their caretaker, their eved, their servant, who serves them with acts of chesed, acts of kindness, acts of munificence and generosity. Is there another side, though, that perhaps is a little bit more uncomfortable, that is also a requirement of a Torah leader? Sometimes the Torah leader will be Dome Lemalach Hashem Tzivakos, will be similar to an angel, but some of his flock might be angels with dirty faces. Might be individuals who are not acting so perfectly themselves. Is the Torah leader supposed to always preserve his kind disposition and his gentle demeanor, or is part of Torah leadership also the requirement that perhaps you have to do more than a private citizen in terms of speaking out against the injustices, or speaking out against the abuses, or speaking out against the transgressions of others who are members of the community. So this is what brings source number 13. Very, very important source. Amar Abaye. Abaye says, Haitzorim Mirabonon, if you have a young community Torah leader, that's a Tzorim Mirabonon, often utilized in this fashion, Demarachman Le B'nei Mosa, everybody loves the guy. Wow, salt of the earth. What a sweet fellow. Never causes any trouble, never gets in our way, never gives us any problems. La Mishum Demali Tfei, doesn't mean that such a leader is particularly excellent. Ela Mishum Lamuchak Lubu Mili Deshmaya. If everybody loves him, that's also not a good sign. He has to be of impeccable character, but he has to be somebody that people really don't like sometimes. Because if everybody likes him, it means he's not giving them enough musar. Amar Rava Mireshav Aminai. Rava says, first I had said, Hani B'nei Mechuzah Kuli Rachamili. So first they said, everybody loves me. Kimin Da'avei Dayna. But once I had to start judging them, right? It was like when Yisro, in yesterday's parsha, right, set up the whole court system. So the Torah tells us after he set up the whole court system and everybody had their cases adjudicated by different classes of judge, right? Sarei Chamishim, Sarei Meot, right? That you had different categories of judges hearing different cases. What happens at the end of the story? Vayishalach Moshe Eschosno Vayelach Lo El Arzo. Moshe sends Yisro away. Why do you have to send Yisro away? So the Teferis Yohonasan commentary explains you have to send him away because everybody wanted to kill Yisro, because everyone who lost the court case said, it's all Yisro's fault. You know, he set up the whole system. So Yisro had to escape with his life. So the same idea says, Rava, when I started judging their cases, so Minayu Sanili, Uminayu Rachmanili, some of them still liked me, but some of them hated me. You can guess who liked him and who hated him. They won the case, he was wonderful. They lost the case, wasn't such a good guy anymore. But then, Rava says that when a person would come in front of me one day, he would lose his case, but when the merits were on his side, he would win the case. I realize it's going to be the one way or another. Either they're all going to love me, or they're all going to hate me. What does that mean? It means that there will be times of struggle, and there will be times of tension for a rabbinic leader who gets up and speaks out against what's right and what's wrong, that sometimes he's going to have to speak out and say something is wrong or somebody was wrong, and that person's going to feel bad. And that is going to be a tension that is part of the job. In order for a person to be a Torah leader, the person has to be willing to face criticism and even to face dissent as a cost and as a price for speaking out against what's wrong and speaking in favor for what is right. That is also a responsibility of a Torah leader. So you would think, okay, so then the price is going to be that the individual will necessarily have enemies. So the reassurance of the Gemara is that if a person really is scrupulous to act with integrity and to always act according to what's right, then eventually, it might take some time, but eventually individuals would realize that they're not being targeted and they're not being unfairly prejudiced or discriminated against, but the rabbi is just consistently standing up for what's right, and it has nothing, it's not any kind of a personal vendetta against any individual, and the people in the community will learn that all they have to do in order to be in good favor is to comport themselves with integrity, to comport themselves according to Torah law and according to Torah values, and then there's not going to be any type of a war or a battle against them that is waged by the rabbi, but that everything the rabbi is doing is in order to raise and elevate their level and the level of the community as a whole.
And when the people see that the level of the community as a whole is being elevated because it's a rabbinic leader who stands for integrity, so then ultimately that will lead in the vast ruba of the community, as the Gemara says, even kulu, even figuratively the entire community, having tremendous affection for the rabbi. And that affection for the rabbi is the appropriate affection that will go along with having a greater affection and a greater appreciation of Torah. And the contemporary posik, the Tzitz Eliezer, Rabbi Eliezer Yehuda Waldenberg, in his Shilas Tshuvas Tzitz Eliezer, he just passed away about, 7 or 8 years ago. So the Tzitz Eliezer says this explicitly. He says that there is a general principle that if you're worried that if you're going to give somebody tochacha, you're going to give somebody musr, that individual is going to Shim Yochichenu. This is the end of the second line. Shim Yochichenu Yisna'enu V'yinko Mimenu Ein Lehochicho. The person's going to end up hating you. So then you have. Then it's better to refrain from giving musr. He says that's only Hurak B'mitzah Sochach Tochiach Amisecha. That's only between yourself and your next door neighbor. It's probably you don't want to have a Hatfield McCoy type feud going forward into the future. But if somebody is in a position of Torah leadership authority, they're a rabbi of a city of a community, he was appointed specifically for the purpose of being a leader of the community, in order to teach them the proper way of life, to raise the level of observance and proper conduct within the community. So then, that's another price of Torah leadership, another part of the character of the Torah leader, is that he can't be concerned if he's going to earn some enmity in the process. His main focus in life has to be on raising the kavod Hashem, lahaksi keset Torah liyoshna. V'zel b'chlam ha'sha'amu v'zal, and this is included within what we just mentioned in the aforementioned Gemara, haitzor b'mei rabbanon, t'merakami le b'nei mosa, lo'im b'nei tamali, rakim b'nei shlochikam, emili d'shmaya, that you can't make it a priority to be beloved by everybody. You have to act in a way in which you are raising the stature of God's name. You have to act in a proper fashion. But if in acting in a proper fashion, if in giving the musr, when people aren't acting properly, that's going to cause enmity and it's going to cause people to dislike you, that cannot be your concern. And the promise and assurance that the Gemara gives to those in Torah leadership positions is that eventually they're going to like you when they see that you don't have anything personal against them, but you're just doing it all l'shem shemayim. And that is what the Rambam says in source number 15. The Rambam says, when Yisro is giving all the criteria to Moshe, what to look for in his in Dayanim, in the people who would be the judges of the community, so he mentioned Anshei Chayil, mentioned people of people who are warriors. So what does it mean, people who are warriors, people of tremendous gevurah, tremendous strength, sheyelan lev amitz lahatzil oshuk miyad oshko, that they should have a very strong heart, Lahatzil Ashuk Miyad Oshko, to save the oppressed and the vulnerable from being trampled. Ke'inyan Shinam Avayaka Moshe VeYoshia, and as it says, how did Moshe merit to be a leader of Klal Yisrael? Then when he saw that these poor defenseless girls, the Benos Tzlovkod, were being beaten up basically by the other shepherds, so he came to their rescue. Even if it wasn't necessarily the popular thing to do. That a Torah leader has to help the poor, has to help the defenseless, even if it isn't necessarily the popular thing to do. I had a wonderful example of this type of intervention when I was serving as director of the Beis Din, where I had to really engage in the unpleasant task of giving very public musr to a particular rabbinic personality who did something that I felt was no bad feelings against the person per se, but there was such an avla that had been perpetrated against a defenseless individual that was so in contradiction to Torah values, and nobody else seemed to be saying anything, so I felt that it was necessary to take public action on the part of the Beis Din, and I just sent letters out to everybody essentially proclaiming our indignation. What happened was that there was a woman who had been going through a divorce with her husband. The matter had been unsettled. There was some disagreement as to whether she had a proper heter to go into the court system or whether she precipitously brought the divorce outside of the Beis Din system. And in the meantime, the husband found another woman to marry, and he found the rabbis who gave him permission to marry a second woman, even though he had not given the first wife a get. And not only did they perform the wedding of this man to the second woman, but they didn't even require that he give a get to his first wife in the process. And when I found out about it, first I clarified that this was really true, this really happened. I started to consult different individuals. They said, yeah, we're not really involved in that. We were involved in this aspect. Yeah, it's such a messy thing. I can't really interfere. I can't intervene. I can't say anything. And I felt that what kind of a community would we have if we allowed this type of an avla to take place, where such a thing could be allowed to happen? And I made a big tumult at the time from the vantage point of the Beis Din. Again, of course, with the support of somebody who really exemplifies all of the wonderful attributes that I've been discussing the whole shiur, our own Rav Gedalia Dov Schwartz Shlita. Eventually, as a result of all of these efforts and the tumult that was made, the situation was rectified and the woman received her get. So I met one of the Rabbanim who was involved in this affair a number of years later. And you figure that the person might have some anger over the fact that we had made such a tumult. And he turned to me and he said, I just want to thank you for opening up our eyes to just the injustice of the situation. I don't think that we were sufficiently focused on exactly what was going on at the time. But of course, once you sent out your letters and you made your calls, it all kind of made sense. And I'm so happy that you were able to lead us into the proper path. And this was such a beautiful confirmation, basically, of the point of that Gemara in Suvas. This is what, and I'm not tuning the horn of the Beis Din or anything of that sort, but just if you live the experience, then it's a wonderful reinforcement that this is part of what you have to do when you're in a Torah leadership position. You have to, in addition to trying your best to represent the type of character that we want to embody in positions of Torah leadership, you have to also do your utmost to ensure that the community conducts itself in accordance with the highest ethical standards of Torah values. And sometimes that does mean engaging in a certain amount of unpleasantness in terms of intervening in sordid type of situations. But that is also very much our solemn responsibility. I'll just conclude with source number 16, which is, I think, the ultimate reminder of the responsibility of the mantle of leadership, where there was a situation where Rabbi Barafuna had a forest with some trees that were supposed to be cut down to allow boats to pass. So Amalei Nekud Tzmar, they said to him, go and cut them down your trees. So Amalei Kutsi Laivati Sai. So he said, yeah, when the others cut their trees, I'll cut mine. In this particular case, he was justified, but that's not the focus. So V'hadda Nekud Tzan, and then afterwards, I'll cut mine. So Heichi Avidachi. How could he say, let the others act properly first, and then I'll follow suit? V'haksiv, and this is the focus. There's a pasuk that teaches us, and this is a general pasuk that we're always supposed to bear in mind in our own conduct, hiskoshishu v'koshu, that you're supposed to first adorn yourself before you adorn others. Rama Reish Lakish, kishot atzmecha, v'achaka kishot acher. That if you're trying to bring about a certain state of affairs, then the best way to do that is modeling through your own behavior. So you'll say I said that already, but there are aspects of this that are not as immediately obvious and apparent. And I'll give you just one illustration. Let's say that you are running a school institution, and you come to the conclusion that you need to be able to manifest greater warmth. There isn't enough warmth that is being conveyed by the teachers, by the rebbeim, that you want to bring about an atmosphere of greater warmth. So if the way that you bring about the atmosphere of greater warmth is by saying these five people, who really are very fine erecha individuals, so doing their best, they're not so good at projecting warmth. So you bring them all into your office and you coldly chew them out and fire them in order that you can bring in others who are more effective at being able to convey the warmth. In my opinion, this is a violation of Piskosha Shuva Koshu. The way that you're going to bring about greater warmth is by acting coldly. The way in which a Torah leader of an organization says, we have to, you know, raise up the ethical conduct, and therefore I'm going to act unethically towards everybody in the organization in order that I bring in those who are going to be able to transmit the ethical values. So that already has to be a red flag that maybe, you're not really going to be effective in accomplishing your goals, because the only way that you can make sure to bring about the virtuous results that you're looking for is by acting in accordance with that virtue yourself. And that is, I think, also an extremely important element of Torah leadership, to exemplify those values in your own conduct, both personally and organizationally as well, that you are looking to transmit to the community as a whole. That is Hiskoshishu Vakoshu. So to summarize, Rabosai, we have to make sure that when we are selecting individuals for Torah positions, that we are looking for those who are not coveting leadership per se. We have to make sure that our top priority is in terms of being having leaders who strive to be and hopefully can be as best as possible. Doma lamala Hashem tzivakos. Leadership is not only, however, refraining from sin and from inappropriateness, but leadership is also being proactive, even though sometimes it's unpleasant, in order just to stamp out justice. And leadership, ultimately and most importantly, is about modeling those values that we look to transmit to our community as a whole. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Rabbi Reese. We're going to take a 2-minute break, and then we'll begin with Rabbi Myers.